Back again with another episode of the Career Bound Podcast. This morning, we're going to talk about how to make wealth and probably go down several different rabbit trails, but most notably, just resurfaced an article from Paul Graham, founder of Y Combinator. This is an old article. I don't even remember when it was written, probably May 2004. Title is How to Make Wealth, but kind of lays out this proposition of the value of a startup as a way to concentrate sort of your energy, effort, impact all into a short period of your time in your life and career as a way to have sort of this outsized impact on your ability to create wealth over a short period of time rather than, you know, over the course of your career. And a lot of great insights in there. I think we'll break down sort of a lot of the really valuable aspects of thinking about wealth creation through the lens of like starting your own business or working at a startup, whatever, but we'll also explore some other sides of the equation there of, you know, different types of employment, different types of career opportunities. So Cameron, open it up, you know, when we talk about creating wealth, doesn't have to be just in the context of this article, but kick us off with some opening thoughts here.
Yeah, let's kind of go back, let's riff on the article itself and try to get like a quick overview and summary, and then we can go off into, you know, a few different rabbit holes and such. But so the article is essentially making the argument to choose a startup career path. And it's, you know, essentially making the argument it's better to work on and work in, you know, startups as a, if you're optimizing for wealth, you know, building wealth in your career, you're going to have more opportunity to do so at a startup that is working on a big impactful problem with a much smaller team compared to your, you know, traditional, large company, large corporate jobs. You know, if you're coming out of college or you're getting your career started, you know, most, you know, it makes the point, like most people coming out of the school kind of life stage of school, they're looking to kind of keep that same lifestyle going. Like in school, we're with a large group of people. We're waking up every day. We're going into the same building and we're surrounded by each other, you know, all throughout, you know, K through 12. And then you repeat that in college. And then once you graduate college, you're looking for a company to join. You're looking for a job that is going to, you know, pay you a certain amount of money for you to show up and do good work. Talks about some of the limiting aspects of, you know, just finding a job at a, you know, reasonably successful larger company, you know, in terms of building wealth. It's one is you're one of, you know, 1,000 or 10,000 or even more. So you kind of, you know, become the average, unless you're in a very specific kind of role where your value creation can be measured. And he gives the examples of being in sales or being a software engineer. Overall, like your ability to, you know, increase your earning potential, you know, is going to be limited somewhat because it's not in such a large group of people, it is very hard to measure what everyone's individual contributions are to the company. And so, you know, using that goes back and makes the argument, if you're the ambitious, hardworking type who wants to optimize for, you know, building, you know, a much significant more amount of wealth, you should be focused on startups. We'll get into some of the specific insights here, but just wanted to kind of set the stakes. We're talking about, you know, as a starting point for this conversation, why startups over working at, you know, a larger kind of corporate environment company.
Yep. And kind of before that, I think that there's another foundational insight that kind of gets glossed over in this article. I mean, I don't know how many times I've read this over the years. Every time I feel like there's another takeaway, but buried in the middle of it is Paul kind of breaks down like, what is wealth? It's not money. It's money's just a medium exchange. And he like very succinctly talks about you know, the history of money. But he talks about like the essence of what wealth is. And he gives this example of like, if you've got an old beat up truck in your backyard and just sitting there and, you know, not in use, and you decide to spend the summer restoring this car and you fix it up and now it's ready to drive or it's ready to sell, you've created wealth. No one else is poorer as a result of you creating, you know, creating that wealth of improving something around you. He also talks about like creating software. And I think that this is done. It's not just limited to tech startups, software. This is, you know, people who are actually creating things. And it's not just creating something from scratch. It's you are providing a solution to a problem somebody else has. Like you're creating something that other people want. And that's sort of what he boils it down to, is like that's what wealth creation is you are delivering something that other people want. It's not just businesses making money and then paying their employees. But that's kind of a foundational insight here as you think about like how to make money. It's like, well, what can you do? What can you offer to the world that other people want? And I think that's the first like big pill you have to swallow. And then second, it's a matter of like, how do you go about putting yourself in a position to be the beneficiary of the value that you exchange? So like you kind of go into this negotiation, like you're talking about students coming out of college, joining the company, and they're like, their work effort is averaged with all the other employees of that business who are creating something that somebody else wants. And so that sort of value that gets captured by the business gets defrayed across all these different people that are employees of the business. And some of them may not even be directly connected with the value creation. You know, they may be administrative workers or they're like janitors at the building where the office is. And like, this is where I think a lot of young people, they get frustrated because they just don't understand this. Like school doesn't prepare you to think about this. It doesn't prepare you to think about terms of like, how close are you to the action? How close are you to the actual value creation? How well can you measure your contribution? And how much weight does your individual effort carry sort of through the whole cycle there? And so this is where I think a lot of young people get frustrated because they're like, I'm working really hard. I feel like I'm doing a lot of work, but, you know, I get paid this for doing this job. You know, maybe I'm in HR or something, but the salesperson who seems like they're having a lot more fun and maybe they don't work as hard, they get paid a lot more money. It's not just it's not because the world is unfair. It has a lot to do with sort of this idea of not just how wealth is created, but like your ability to measure your contribution and your ability to influence that exchange of value. That's why salespeople make more money, is like, it's very easy to measure the value they're creating for an organization and creating, I say that loosely, like salespeople aren't probably making the products or services, but they're getting other people to purchase the product or service. And it's very easy to measure sort of how much business they're bringing in. So those are a few tangents. There's a lot of other really good stuff in this article that we may get to, but.
Yeah. Another kind of really good insight from the article is how he kind of defines what a company is in this piece. So, you know, I think he pretty much says, you know, instead of thinking about your career trajectory and being strategic with it in terms of like, what is the best job for me to go, you know, try to land and prepare for, essentially what you're, in order to create wealth, you have to create something that you have to make things that other people really want. And all a company is a group of people that are coming together to make something that other people want. And so you're creating value and then you're figuring out how to capture that value. So if just from a starting point of thinking about your career, it's like, okay, how can I earn and, you know, how can I earn the amount of wealth that I want to specifically build at, you know, various stages of my career, instead of just thinking about like, what job should I go get? It's starting with that like fundamental question of how can you deliver value to other people instead?
Yeah. And so this is an interesting thing that I think is worth sussing out too. This particular article, it's focused almost exclusively on the financial dimension of wealth. That's sort of the proposition about working at a startup, is that they're basically focused on outsized outcomes in most times. And so like, if you concentrate, you give up everything else, all of your free time to pour into the solving this problem so that you can scale this solution to a ton of people. Like, if you succeed, you're going to have this outsized financial outcome because of the impact you've made. And you made this sort of trade-off. I think it's also important though, and this took me a long time, I didn't think about things like this early on in my career, but life experience and being in different types of businesses at different stages and different scales and working with different, different people in different types of economic arrangements has given me more perspective on this, is that it's not just about optimizing for wealth creation in the financial sense. There are also all of these other forms of wealth that sort of play into your decision about how you structure your life and career. So I think about, I always love to talk about the small business owner, because I feel like the typical small business owner thinks about wealth, whether they define it in these terms or not, they think about wealth in a much more practical way. It's not just, hey, I want to make good money and I want to be financially independent and be able to like provide for my family and like take pride in my work and help customers. But I also want my business to be something that is a direct extension of my values. I want to be able to help people in my community, both through my business and as a byproduct of my business. I want to be able to invest in the people and place where I inhabit. I want to be able to have a high degree of interaction with my customers, where I have that actual tangible sort of closed loop of I'm creating value, but I'm also getting to see the impact of the value that I'm creating, because it's here in the community that I live in. You know, there's all the other extensions of that too, like small business versus startup. Like, you have a lot more autonomy. You have probably the ability to go like be present at your kids' baseball games and things like that. Like, you have a lot more freedom and flexibility. It's not to say that's not a very challenging thing to run a small business too, but those are on different ends of the continuum, I think, of like the small business owner and the startup wager, like the startup founder, the startup employee, early stage startup employee, especially when you're approaching a startup as a way to make a ton of money in a concentrated period of time. The economic exchange is not just about the money. It's about trading everything else while you're doing that to give you the best shot of having this like outsized financial impact. And that's sort of the part of the proposition he's setting out. And he doesn't spend a ton of time kind of talking about that trade-off in depth, but it's like the people that tend to have those outsized outcomes, they forsake everything else. And then after they, you know, if they are successful, then they have, you know, you have whatever type of opportunities. If you make a ton of money, like, you're in a better financial spot. But I think as a lot of young people, they're at the start of their careers, I think a lot of people, that trade-off is not a good proposition. That's not what they're actually after. They do like the idea of having massive impact. They do, you know, a lot of do like the idea of making a ton of money. And being work, you know, being part of like something that's really challenging and being around competent people, but it can be a great thing at the start of your career. But I think a lot of people too, it's like, how do I do all of those things? You know, how do I make decent money longer term? How do I build skills, work around cool people, have an impact, but also I don't forsake all these other aspects of my life that are what I would constitute as non-financial wealth, like my ability to have relationships and invest my time and resources with the people and in the things that I want to, and like not be 100% consumed by my job all of the time just so I can have a financial outcome. Like it's a trade-off, and I'm not condemning one way or the other. I think that sometimes you don't recognize the trade-offs that are actually taking place.
Yeah. I think what the article does well, and you can expand on it, is it sets up this comparison of from a, like, choosing between a even more, like, the very traditional, go get a stable, steady job inside, you know, a larger corporation, a larger company. And, you know, within that, of course, there's going to be different ranges of, you know, how successful you can be. And he's making the, you know, he's comparing, all right, like, in a stereotypical startup environment, you know, here are the trade-offs associated with those two. And, you know, he makes really good points about, like, startup offering, like, you can create more value, you can be more impactful, you can work with a higher intensity for a much, it offers the ability to get the value of working in a large, you know, company, you know, having a 20, 30, 40 year career path in a large company, you can actually capture, you know, the same amount of value in a 3 to 4 year timeline in a startup environment. Yeah. But I think the important thing from the article, and like why I would recommend any, you know, young person starting to think more deeply about their career, like read this article, because it helps you to start assessing career opportunities in a really valuable way. Like there are different kinds of career paths or different kinds of work that you can do. And like the career environment you're choosing to put yourself in is like one of the, like you, I would say that is kind of what you're trying to figure out in the first 5 to 10 years of your career, is like, what are the general directions that are going to be good for me? If you do think you're, you know, really, you know, have that stereotypical like millennial and Gen Z desire to like, I want to make a big impact on the world, then, you know, maybe it makes like, I want to be a part of a smaller team with a big mission and, you know, kind of have that like call to adventure, et cetera. Like, yeah, I would like, if that's how you're feeling, like, go work for a startup for a couple of years and essentially try it on for yourself and see how it fits you. You know, of course there's value to be gained from, you know, spending time in a larger company. Maybe that's a good first decision to make, you know, starting your career, because it's going to give you that initial, you know, level of, you know, financial independence. And now you're in a position where, you know, depending on what your risk tolerance is, like it makes, like now you have more courage to go, you know, work on a startup. Maybe you're more valuable to a startup's mission because of the skills you've developed there. And then, you know, we've seen, you know, there's a very common kind of trajectory going on right now where the typical kind of like credentialist focused individual goes to school, you know, gets their finance degree, works in finance for 3 to 5 years. And, you know, they're like, oh man, I want to go, you know, find a small business that I can, you know, acquire and, you know, totally change the lifestyle of my career choices. Because I realized like I was going to end up miserable for 30 to 40 years working inside a larger company and everything. But I think, the big thing is, I think this article gives you, it starts to ask the right questions of how you should make career choices. Whereas through school, most people are taught you need to identify the kind of job that you're going to be a good fit for, and then develop those skills and then, you know, become qualified for it and then go land that job. And, you know, that's the end of the story. And, you know, now the next 30 years of your career are kind of laid out for you and stuff. Like, there's small business ownership, small business entrepreneurship. There's, you know, kind of playing the startup game. There's going into larger corporate environments. Like, there's kind of these bigger career buckets. I think depending on who you are individually, like, you can build a lot of wealth for yourself, you know, over a 10, 20, 30 year career working for larger companies. But it's really important for you to understand within that game, within that environment, what are going to be the kinds of roles and opportunities that give you the most leverage. So, like, you know, Paul talking about, hey, like, salespeople, it's easier to measure their impact. Therefore, you know, you can kind of, you have more control over, you know, how much value you can capture depending on your skill set, depending on your work ethic, et cetera. Another good, you know, kind of career path within those larger company environments is like becoming like a top tier, you know, executive or manager, et cetera. Like you are more closely tied to the overall, you know, value creation, value capture of the company in those kinds of positions. But just know, like, you know, there's trade-offs. So, like, what does it take to become, you know, a high-performing, you know, like, enterprise salesperson? And is that going to fit, like, your personality, your values that you want to live out in your life, et cetera? And, you know, same thing for startups. Not, I would, you know, Paul says it in the article. We would agree, like, the vast majority of young professionals are not going to be, you know, typically, like, being a career startup professional is not going to be the best thing for most people. It's high intensity. It's, you know, very uncertain outcomes related to like an individual startup that you're choosing to work on, et cetera. And then same thing with like small business entrepreneurship. Like that comes with its own trade-offs, you know, both good and bad. But I think the goal should be, hey, I'm going to spend the first 5 to 10 years of my career gaining experience that leads to the self-knowledge that, you know, I can feel confident that I'm putting myself in the kinds of positions and environments that make sense for me to be, you know, that makes sense for me individually, depending on where I'm at in my, you know, life overall and my career, what my natural strengths are, et cetera. You know, what are going to be the best environments for me to like live out my values and all those things. So I think that should be the first thing before it's like, oh, am I good at sales or marketing? Or, you know, should I have this specific kind of job? Like you should be thinking about what kind of overall kind of like career environment you want to put yourself in.
So there's another insight in here that I want to break down and kind of flows from your last point is he has this bit in here. I'm just going to read. It says startups are not magic. They don't change the laws of wealth creation. They just represent a point on the far end of the curve. There's a conservation law at work here. If you want to make $1 million, you have to endure $1 million worth of pain. One example, to make $1 million, you could work for the post office your whole life, save every penny of your salary. And then, you know, at the end of your life, you've accumulated $1 million, as opposed to this proposition of a startup, like focusing on, you know, compressing all that. What he says is in a startup, you compress all this stress into 3 or 4 years. And so I want to take a sidestep again away from just thinking about this in terms of like purely financial wealth, because I think also the proposition you're making early on in your career, you're taking part in based on like where you choose to start your career, the types of businesses, types of organizations, and the size and scale of those two is you are making a decision about your own ability to create wealth, your non-financial wealth, like your human capital, your skills, your experience, your earning potential longer term, like your ability to accelerate all of those talents for yourself. Like, for instance, a byproduct of working at a very intense startup early on is that because of that intensity, because of the focus, because of the pace, you're developing skills at a rapid rate. You are being thrown into the deep end and forced to swim over and over and over again. And on the other side of that, you know, whether you succeed financially or not, you have this other thing, which is an asset, your ability to now go operate at a higher level, to be more valuable. You have probably much more impactful skills as a result of that, packing, you know, 10 to 20 years of career experience into 3 or 4 years of like really dedicated focus. That's not to say you can't still build those skills, but if you go work at like, say, a nonprofit or like a Fortune, you know, 1000 company, and you're hired as, you know, like the entry level marketer, it may take you 15 years and you may never actually, you know, break the ceiling, but it may take you like 15 years to get the same amount of exposure as somebody in a startup gets over 3 to 4 years. And yeah, part of the calculus there is, this is true of startups competing in the market too, is like, there's something of a first mover advantage. A 25-year-old that has 35 more good years in his or her career and has developed all those skills front loaded has this sort of trajectory opportunity, as opposed to somebody who's, you know, they're now in their 30s and they spent 10 to 15 years like slowly climbing the ladder. Like they're the way that they've expanded their purview of how the business works is much slower. It's kind of this creeping process, and you get to the end of that and it's like, you've built a career that works best in that environment. And that's probably true of the startup person. You know, like it's harder to go plug into like a slow moving corporate environment too. Like you're making that trade-off. And I think that that's an important thing too, is I do have somewhat of a, I have a soft spot in my heart because of the values of that startup, but whether you choose a startup or not, I think the point he makes about this conservation law of like, if you want to make $1 million, you have to endure $1 million worth of pain. If you want to build skills that can create $1 million of wealth, you have to endure $1 million worth of pain. Like you have to pay that tuition to build those skills. You can do that in a concentrated time frame. You can do that in an extended time frame. You can do it somewhere in the middle where maybe you're working really, really hard. You've got your moonlighting outside of your day job. You're like always making momentum. And I think that's sort of the thing that people early in their career should not lose sight of, is there is a tremendous advantage to you longer term if you approach the first leg of your career journey as this opportunity to concentrate a ton of pain right up front and just run at full intensity so that you have access to this higher trajectory earlier and faster, because that's where the power of compounding interest really takes effect. And like, this is, you know, we've seen this with so many of our, you know, students and alumni in Praxis too. Like how many of them now are 5, 6, 7 years in their career, they're in their early to mid 20s still, and they've been making great money, and they have this level of autonomy and control over their career, and they're in a good financial spot, as opposed to like the person who they're just getting started at, you know, age 24, 25. Like you're in this, you've accelerated opportunities like 10 years in advance, in many cases, and maybe even farther ahead, depending on the circumstances. But that's kind of the true economic trade-off, I think, when you think about like, whether it's startups or not, is like, concentrated pain in a short period of time right at the start, as opposed to spreading that out forever.
Yeah. And for those who don't naturally relate to the, you know, using pain as like, this is what you want to optimize, like it's a stand-in for learning and growth. Like you're trying to fit in as much, as many learning experiences as you possibly can that lead to your, you know, skill level going up, your, not just your skill level on, you know, specific things, but just like, if you've been in a startup environment for 3 to 4 years, the chances that you've been exposed to a lot of different, you know, situations with the business where it's like, hey, like things are going really well, therefore we need to increase our intensity to keep up with, you know, the growth that we're capturing. There's going to be times where it's like, oh man, like we're not sure if the business is going to be around, you know, after the next 3 to 6 months, like we could run out of cash. Like, you know, you're gonna see some stuff essentially. And I think that's the major benefit. So for you individually, thinking about what does it look like for me to optimize for, you know, the most like learning and growth that I can achieve, you know, through the first 5 years of my career, I would say.
Yeah. So there's another insight. I'm gonna keep pulling stuff because there's another one that I really like too. He's talking about startups again and like building your startup to outpace competitors. I think it's a really apt metaphor as well for a young person early in their career thinking about their ability to win opportunities on the job market or whatever is he talks about like anytime you come to a difficult fork in the road about like what the company should do next, or as a young adult, you're like, I have these two opportunities or I have these two interests. Which way should I go? He says, one of the decisions we always made at Viacom and, you know, the company that they ended up selling, was like, if it was the choice between creating two features that were both, you know, roughly the same ROI per impact or per like effort to create, we would always choose the harder one. And we always talked about this as running up the stairs. And the reason that we talked about that is like, we knew that competitors wouldn't chase us up the stairs. Like if we were doing things that competitors couldn't do or they wouldn't do, they weren't willing to do, that would allow us to have this sort of escape velocity that we're running at, where we're always able to compete on our own merits. And that gives us sort of this advantage on the market. I think as a young professional, you are on your own journey. Don't look at yourself and compare yourself to how you're doing financially to other people. It's unhealthy. But I do think it is worth, when you're thinking about like, hey, I want to be somebody who can win opportunities, and maybe you have a specific career interest, I think it is worth paying some attention, especially as you get a little bit further along, to the how your opportunities and the experiences you get compare to the average person who may be competing against you for the same types of opportunities you want. If you're somebody who's like, yeah, I want to be a VP of a company someday, or I want to be an executive, like you need to err towards the more impressive side of experiences, but like not just in terms of like the face value of what those look like, but the things that are going to prepare you with the skills in order to do that job. When you're applying to jobs early in your career, like it's not just, I think a lot of people overlook this, is it's not just you on your own merits. It's you compared to the next best person in line. You know, when companies are making these hiring decisions. And so when you're thinking early on in your career, you shouldn't just go do stuff that you're not interested in because it's going to make you look better on paper. But I'm saying when there are things that you're interested in and there's an objective you have in mind and you're not sure which route to choose, a good rule of thumb, I think, and taking the metaphor from this article, is like run upstairs, choose the ones that is more difficult, the one that is going to force you to grow more, the one that scares you a little bit more, because the growth and the development, the skills you're going to build, the experience you're going to get is likely going to be way more valuable as opposed to the easy route, which is probably what the average person you might be competing on the job market is opting for. It's like the easier route. So, and it's not about necessarily competing against other people, but I think it is a useful framework for like thinking about how to navigate those forks in the road professionally.
Yeah, I think, you know, for, you know, we work with a lot of young people and they're, you know, at the time where they're choosing between various career opportunities that they could pursue or accept formal job offers for, et cetera. And we're always trying to make sure and kind of be the sounding board for them to be like, hey, like forget, you know, if the salary is, you know, 5K higher at this, you know, this company versus the other company, let's think through like what represents the best growth opportunity for you? And I think it comes down to that. And so, like, going back to what you're trying to, what you're saying is, like, the one that's probably more challenging or not the path of least resistance is there's at least a good indication that you, usually the ones that seem more challenging or there's something that's, you know, kind of uncertain about it. So it could be like, hey, this company is offering, you know, it's an early stage startup. They're only offering me, you know, 30K starting salary compared to, you know, this other company that's, you know, farther ahead. They're more, they're in a more stable position already. You know, they're able to offer me, you know, 40 to 45K starting salary. Of course, it's possible that the company, you know, offering the higher salary is just overall the better opportunity. But I think it's important to make sure that you are thinking about opportunities much deeper below the surface than just like, what's my job title? What's my compensation package? You know, am I going to be comfortable here, you know, over the next 12 months? Like, which you're trying to figure out which opportunity is going to lead to, you know, an experience that's going to help you get to where you want to be longer term. Or, you know, and that could mean like you have a specific kind of career path in mind, like, hey, I want to be, you know, VP or an executive at a company someday. Therefore, I need to make sure I get a certain kind of experience. Or it could just be like, I want to have more optionality for myself. And I want to be on that kind of, you know, higher growth, career growth rate trajectory.
Yeah. I'll give you a specific example from my career too, because I don't think it's always just as black and white as like, which one of these seems harder. You know, which one is a little bit more treacherous, if you will, like that's going to be more growth. But so this is early in my career. I was at a company that's growing very well, is growing very quickly. I felt like I was always punching above my weight class to keep up with the growth of the company and like be able to continue to climb the ladder. And I was starting to get job offers from the outside, from other companies. And this happened, you know, several times where there were cool opportunities that came up that were exciting. And they were like an immediate, probably boost in title. The compensation may or may not have been comparable, but it wasn't something that was like wildly different. And several of those opportunities came up. And even though I was excited, I remember one in particular that I turned down. The deciding factor was the company I was at, I was the youngest person in the room. I was surrounded by a bunch of executives that were 10 to 30 plus years my senior. And I toiled over that decision for a long time, but that was the thing that ultimately was the deciding factor between going and joining a scrappier, faster moving, earlier stage company, which really excited me. But I was like, I feel like I haven't quite gotten all of the value I can get by being the youngest, dumbest person in the room. And that scares the shit out of me. Like it really did, because I felt every day like I had to prove myself. And I knew that that was something where it's like the goalposts are always moving. And that's going to force me on this, like to aim here. Like I need to always be trying to like grow at an accelerated rate. And there's people that are so far ahead of me, and I can learn so much more from in a condensed amount of time that scares me. And that's sort of that early, you know, that's what I mean when I say run up the stairs again, is like, sometimes it's a matter of like what you think is going to, forget the financial income, financial impact and all those other things. But like the thing that is going to require the most amount of growth or effort from you, that's what I think is a good kind of a good litmus test when you've got different opportunities. It's not just excitement. It's not just financial. It's like all things being equal, 2 to 3 years down the road, where are you at as a result of this, like the endurance task from both of these different scenarios.
Yep. Yeah, it's never simple. Well, sometimes it is clear and obvious what the better opportunity is, but the point is it's usually having to do with non-obvious factors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. All right. What, anything else to touch on before we wrap up?
We will drop the link to this article in the comments below so that you can access it. Definitely recommend reading it. If you enjoy this article, we did an episode recently too about 10 books. We talked about the Almanac of Naval Ravikant, which I think is a great accompaniment to this too. Also talking about how to build wealth in that book, but great article. Definitely a thinker. We'll link to that. And thanks for listening.